Spirit Blade Underground Episode 400. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audiophile encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for System 5. Spirit Blade Underground Episode 400.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out SpiritBlade.com. Now, I'd like to let you know that if you like, you can watch this special 400th episode on youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, including all the usual audio bumpers and widgets that we have between the segments here. So if you want to kind of participate in something a little bit special, you can go over and do that at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. The new music that you might have noticed at the beginning of the show was edited from a song that's in the upcoming special edition of Spirit Blade, A World of Shadows, which is the third part of the Spirit Blade audio drama trilogy. And for more info, of course, you can go to spiritblade.com. What I did is I just removed the vocals and then I adjusted a few other things and I cut and pasted. And, you know, so it's, you know, obviously much shorter than the song will be in the audio drama, the special edition version of the audio drama. The regular legacy edition won't contain any of the songs, for those that are curious about that. There'll be, I'll define and talk about like the rebrand of our audio drama trilogy in the future, but you can count on hearing that track, the full version of that song, actually on Spirit Blade Videos is the name of the channel on YouTube, Spirit Blade Videos, in the coming weeks. I'm not sure exactly when, but I think in anticipation of the release of A World of Shadows, I'm probably going to be releasing a few, you know, video versions of those audio tracks for the songs and trailers and things like that at Spirit Blade Videos. So stay tuned there if you're looking forward to that audio drama release at all. But yeah, I just basically wanted to find music that was a little bit more YouTube friendly for this episode. I mean, I own the license for the music that I normally use, but these days, that's kind of not enough. I mean, it is. I own the license to use it on YouTube as long as I don't monetize the video, which I'm totally fine with. But YouTube's content ID system can just be a little bit quick on the draw, as many of you may know. So I just wanted to avoid the hassle of, you know, getting a strike or whatever the crap and then saying, getting back to them, yes, I own the license, here's my info, blah, 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 blah. I just didn't want to deal with that crap. So I'm not sure if I'll keep this as the opening song or not. It kind of depends on, you know, if for some reason you guys are really interested in seeing a video version of this podcast on a regular basis. So if you want to give me feedback on that, I'd be interested. I don't know. I can't promise that even if a lot of people are interested that it'll happen, because obviously it takes a different amount of work, a different kind of work to make a video of this podcast happen as opposed to just the audio version. It's possible that I could figure out a way to make a video version along with the audio version and not add much, if any, time to my production schedule during the week. I just don't know. I don't know. But I would be interested in your feedback on, you know, whether or not you want to see this as a video, or at least have that option. And, of course, you know, giving your thoughts on that opening song, if you have an opinion one way or the other on whether you think that one fits better to the podcast or the one that I've been using usually for the last episode, since about, I don't know, episode 300 or whenever it was. Anyway, boy, it would be great. This would be right about the time for some kind of YouTube competitor to come along and figure out new software for content IDing and that actually works the way it's supposed to work, doesn't give off a bunch of false positives. Because, man, if there was somebody that had the money to invest in like a new YouTube competitor and they also had that content ID thing nailed, I can just imagine the kind of exodus that would happen from YouTube among those who create gaming videos, which is like such a huge, I want to say, I haven't looked at the stats, but I think it's by far the lion's share of revenue and kind of what people go to YouTube for. So anyway, come on, YouTube competitor, that would be really cool. Anyway, on the show today, on this 400th episode of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, nothing terribly special other than the fact that I'm making a video version out of this, so sorry if you had your hopes up for some retrospective clip extravaganza or something. I did that on episode 100, and that was a ton of work to find a bunch of clips from old episodes, and, you know, just, I don't know, I don't think it's worth it. Anyway, on the show today, news and a spotlight on some Christian geek entertainment, and also a look at how faith has an actual, real effect on our circumstances. All right, lots of show. Let's get to it.
Christians are doing all kinds of things on the internet these days. Some things are cool, some things are strange. I'd like to tell you about what I found Christians doing on this internet. Welcome to the Christian Geek Radar.
Hey, I'm Peter Franson from ChristianGeekCentral.com and Spirit Blade Productions here with your Christian Geek Radar for the month of February 2016. Now, this time there wasn't a lot of news, and so when there are months that don't have a lot of news regarding Christian geekery going on, I like to dip back into our portal back at ChristianGeekCentral.com, where we've got a collection of links to Christian geek websites and creative endeavors going on online or elsewhere that you can, you know, learn about online. So I'm going to be sharing some of those today, but first just a little bit of couple of potpourri items of news, and the first one is To Light X Umbra, which is a Christian Japanese-styled RPG in the classic style of like Super NES games that's kickstarting right now. And the creator of the game writes, To Light X Umbra is a fantasy RPG that takes cues from many of the classics in terms of aesthetics and playstyle. The game is very story-driven with deep and engaging characters that each in their own way help the heroes find their way to light. The thing that sets To Light X Umbra apart from other fantasy RPGs is that the story is one that edifies Christ. Branch Games, the studio behind the game, is a gaming company made up of believers in Christ who know that in all we do, we are to glorify Him who has called us out of darkness into His marvelous light. At its core, To Light X Umbra is an allegory. It tells the story about darkness, how it enters into us, grows, and consumes us, how it causes us pain and ultimately costs us our lives. And yet in the midst of that darkness, there is one who brings light. Now, I'm not the type to kind of, you know, want to highlight and showcase every Christian endeavor that pops up on Kickstarter. That would, there'd just be too many to cover, and a number of those might not be efforts of kind of like the quality bar, I guess, that I have in my mind that I would feel like, you know, okay, this is worth really pointing people to. What grabbed my eye about this one was the effort being put into creating quality art for the game. I really like the portraits that pop up during dialogue, and you can go on the site and see a video where the creator talks about the game, and you see some footage from the game. And so, just aesthetically, I think it looks really nice, and I think the artwork here, the custom artwork, is really important when you're using an RPG Maker game. And if you're not aware of it, RPG Maker is a software that's had a number of iterations that makes it really easy for people to create Japanese-styled RPGs. And one thing that can be true of RPG Maker games is that they all kind of start to look the same after a while. The backgrounds seem to be very much the same as you go from one RPG Maker game to another. And so if you don't do anything to differentiate your tile set or something aesthetically about your game, then it's, I think, just going to get lost in the background unless your story is super compelling or something like that. And for me, I've almost never play RPGs for story. Last time I played a game that, like, the story really engaged me was probably BioShock, maybe BioShock Infinite, but that was also more about how the story was expressed in the exploration of the world and interacting with the characters as opposed to a more passive reading of text or watching of cutscenes. And so the idea of playing a Japanese-style RPG where it's very story-driven, I'm not so sure that I am especially interested in that, but I know that a lot of people really still like that type of game and that type of telling story. For me, I'm much more interested in how I interact with the game. And so for that reason, as I look at the description here, one thing that I would like to get more information about is the gameplay itself. It says that it's taking, you know, cues from many of the classics in terms of aesthetics and play style, as far as like classic fantasy RPGs, but the bulk of the description and what the creator spends time talking about on the site is the story, the characters, the inspiration, and then he goes back into like the dev team and stuff like that. So I'd love to get more information about what the gameplay is like before I personally back this, but I think that what they're clearly going for is a high bar of quality. And I think you'll see that if you watch the video, just the video itself where the developer talks about the game. It's nicely lit. He's got a nice camera. I mean, it's better production quality, certainly, than what I produce, you know. And even though, you know, that doesn't say anything about what the game will look like, it does say, okay, we are endeavoring from top to bottom to put absolute quality into what we're doing. And it's kind of one of the reasons that I do judge books by their cover. If your cover looks kind of crappy or homemade or something like that, I'm going to think to myself, well, maybe that's how the editing was handled too. It was just handled by the author themselves, and as a result, it just kind of is, it's not really clean and professional. So the fact that there's clearly effort being put into quality on this makes me want to point you guys toward this to at least check it out. And maybe if you're interested in more in the gameplay too, you can ask the developer to comment on that. He does give opportunity to ask questions about the project below, and maybe that would give him an opportunity to share more about this project and attract some more attention to it. So anyway, To Light X Umbra is in Kickstarter right now. As I record this, it's 27 days to go. I'm sure it's going to be like a handful of days or maybe even a week less than that by the time this goes up. The next thing I wanted to point your attention to was the fact that That Dragon Cancer is now on Linux with a DRM free version coming. From the designer's newsletter, Ryan Green, the designer, he says, "We wanted to let you know that the Linux version of That Dragon Cancer is now available on the Steam store. We're still working on a DRM free version, presumably for sites like GOG.com, but want to make sure we get a few more fixes in and some language support before we release it in other stores." But anyway, if you've been waiting to play this thing on Linux, it is available right now on Steam. And it sounds like it won't be too terribly long before we get to see a DRM-free version of the game, which is certainly has a lot of appeal for me, even though I've already purchased the game on Steam so that I could do a review for it as quickly as possible. Moving on now, I'm getting back into like what's going on in on our website. See, this is the this is what the portal looks like for the comics animation section. So I'm just going to look at a few of these things today. The first one is Angel Wars Guardian Force. Now, this is a CG animated series that has been out for a while now. There, let's see here. I think as far as like the quality of the art and the CG, I think it's pretty good. I think that maybe not today, but certainly when it first started launching, it was on par with the kind of CG animated series you would see being put out by, you know, any mainstream or secular studio. So I own the first two volumes of this series, and I've been pretty happy with it. I've actually been collecting dust for a while, but it suddenly occurs to me that, oh man, when my boys and I are done watching the old Dungeons and Dragons animated series, which we're all watching for the first time, we've been enjoying that a lot. So these are two volumes I could pull out that I'm sure they would really dig while I'm trying to figure out what the next thing is we might watch together. So yeah, I've been pretty happy with this. It's action-packed. It's definitely aimed toward, I would say, like preteen boys, and I suppose girls that are into, you know, like more action-y type stuff. It's but each kind of episode, I think each DVD comes with maybe two episodes. I can't remember. They're 44 minutes long, so I want to say it's not one 44-minute episode, but I could be wrong. It might be two like 20-something minute episodes on each disc. But anyway, I like the design, their take on kind of angels and how they look in the spiritual world, you know, that we don't see. And it has these angels interacting with people in just the modern day, or maybe is it a futuristic world? Now I can't even remember. It's been so long since I looked at these. But basically, what role angels might potentially play as you and I are making difficult decisions and deciding whether or not we're going to obey something in particular that God has called us to. So they translate that into cool action and fighting between angels and demons and stuff like that in the spiritual world as they interact in subtle ways with the humans that they are protecting and that the demons are attacking in one form or another. So anyway, you can check out that at angelwars.com. You know, the links on Angel Wars, when you go to them, to the publisher, it's like a 404 type of error. So, and the last update that they did on their blog was from, I want to say, what was it, 2 years ago or something? Yeah, 2 years ago. July 3rd, 2014 is the last time that they did any kind of update that I can see on here. So they've kind of been dormant for a while. One of the last things that they said was that they're kind of looking for new ways to kind of explore and represent this universe. So they're maybe looking to kind of reskin it or redesign it or something. I'm not sure what their plans are. They seem to kind of be in hibernation at the moment. But although you can't, you're going to run into errors if you try to buy it directly off their site. These DVDs are easy to find on Amazon. There seem to be a fairly decent amount of them. I mean, you know, only 6 left in stock, only 1 left in stock, you know. But I usually find that, you know, even when it says only 1 or 6 or whatever, that gets replenished pretty soon after they run out of stock. So, and for really low prices as well on Amazon. So, Angel Wars, definitely recommend that, especially if you've got, you know, some younger kids in your family and you're looking for something that you'll enjoy kind of watching too, that it won't just be this really cheesy, smiley kid fest. You know, there's something for dad to help him sit through that time with his kids. So, or mom, for that matter. Moving on, BenAvery.com is where you can learn about this comic book writer who's been in the Christian comic book industry and also in the secular comic book industry for a number of years. You might know Ben already, as he was one of the hosts on the Strangers and Aliens podcast, which is part of the Christian Geek Central Network. And I've interviewed Ben before, I want to say about a couple of different things. It feels like we've had a couple of conversations on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. But anyway, you can check out his work at BenAvery.com. His newest book is basically a reinterpretation or a representation, I should say, of the book of Job. Ben writes about this project. When I first became a comic book writer, there were two projects I wanted to do: The Life of Christ and the Book of Job. Thanks to Kingstone Comics, I have been able to do both. Job is the graphic novel retelling of one of the Bible's most mysterious and interesting books, exploring many questions of life and humanity. When Job's life is turned upside down by forces outside his knowledge, his friends become accusers and his own questions get turned back on his when God gives him answers. Expertly illustrated by Jeff Slemons. And I'm sure those are his words there, expertly illustrated by Jeff Slemons, but just from looking at the cover alone, I would say, wow, that's certainly true. And that's something that I appreciate about Ben Avery's work, especially, you know, in the Christian sector, is that he teams up with artists that can really produce excellent work. And again, you know, that might sound like a familiar word coming from me. That's something that I really care about, something that I think is important as we are being creative as Christian geeks or just Christian artists in general, that we create with excellence and we set the bar as high as we can in the field in which we are creating in. And I think that Ben Avery certainly does that. So again, you can check out what he's up to at benavery.com. And then, let's see, lastly here, I want to highlight a site, beneaththetangles.com. This is going to be of particular interest to you if you're a fan of anime. This is a site that says, well, I'll read the description here, it says, Beneath the Tangles is where, oh crap, I'm going to butcher these, where Ichigo Kurosaki, I am not a fan of anime, Ichigo Kurosaki meets Elijah the Prophet, where Haruhi Suzumiya, I'm also very uncultured and unable to pronounce Japanese names, so very sorry about that. Where Haruhi Suzumiya meets Father Abraham, and where Monkey D. Luffy meets Jesus Christ. It is the meeting point between anime and Christian spirituality. We hope to foster an open community where Christians and non-Christians alike can engage in conversation about anime, manga, and belief. Join the conversation at beneaththetangles.com, where they tell you more about them, and I'll go ahead and read this too. If you've just stumbled upon this site, they say, you may be wondering if this is some sort of joke, some ironic take on religion. After all, can we seriously be looking for Christianity in anime? There's no reasonable intersection between the two, right? It's true that there's very little intentional overlap between Christianity and anime. Thankfully, that's not what our site is all about. When an individual is born again, he or she begins to see God's story of redemption everywhere, in nature, in relationships, even in media. I would certainly echo that. Paraphrasing Timothy Keller, for the Christian, every story has two stories, the one the author tells and the one that reflects the gospel message in some way. Anime is no different. We invite you to join us on our journey as we look at anime through a Christian lens and Christianity through anime and manga. We hope to create a safe community at Beneath the Tangles, one where we can explore and question spirituality and religion as we chat about anime, and where people of all faiths, or none at all, feel welcomed and are eager to engage in discussion. And so that's a neat site, you know, that is welcoming to people who are not believers, but is definitely running itself from a biblical Christian worldview, which I really appreciate. Both of those two ideas kind of coexisting together, being uncompromising in the truths of the faith, but at the same time welcoming and conversant with people that don't share those beliefs. They got a lot of writers, and from what I've seen, I've looked at it, I've read a few of their articles. I'm not super familiar with all the ins and outs and all the different articles and stuff. It's not something I follow on a weekly basis, but I have read enough to see a pattern of just some good thinking and some good quality articles going on at beneaththetangles.com. Well, if you're interested in finding more of Christian geekery out on the web, ChristianGeekCentral.com is the place where you want to go. Click on Portal and see what we have for you there. I also hope you'll stop by our forums and introduce yourself, get to know some other people there. It's a friendly community where you can hang out and geek out while we all seek the truth. Well, I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, and the... See, that's why I should pre-record this instead of reading it fresh every time. Dang it! Anyway, the people in the Christian Geek Central Network, Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. I know you guys hear me say this every week and list off these names, but these guys are all creating really great content, so I do hope you'll check them out. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
All right, well, a few different bits of news and announcements to talk about. First off, just the YouTube rundown. You can find the Christian Geek Radar segment featured on today's episode on YouTube, so you can see visuals and stuff if you're just listening to the show right now of all the stuff that is talked about in that segment today. And then also, I just posted a segment that I called What's Wrong with Following Your Heart, which is actually an edited down segment of my Extra Life marathon that I did back in early November of this last fall, 2015. And so that's just kind of a little segment that I edited down where I talk about what's wrong with following your heart. And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that that's one of my least favorite phrases to hear in pop culture and fiction is follow your heart, do what feels right, do what your heart tells you. You know, that's just terrible. That's a terrible slogan to live by, no matter what form you find it in. But oddly enough, in this video, I do talk about a time when it is appropriate to follow your heart. So if you want to hear my thoughts on when you should follow your heart, that's also a video you'll want to check out at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And of course, as I've said before, this 400th episode of the podcast can be found in its entirety in video form on the YouTube channel for Christian Geek Central. And then while you're there, if you would, please do like, share, and subscribe. All that kind of stuff helps to get people connected to Christian Geek Central that maybe are just ordinarily on YouTube. So if you're listening to this and you're like a podcast, you just listen to the podcast. Going over to YouTube, they have such a nice liking and sharing system that it's just a great way to kind of word of mouth draw people's attention to what's going on the channel, and hopefully connect them also to the website ChristianGeekCentral.com and the community that we have there on the forums. So lots of good stuff can come of that. So that's kind of a tool that I hope you guys will take advantage of. All right, let's talk about Agape Geek Out. Our spring Agape Geek Out community event is coming this April. Just some background now. Agape, if you haven't heard that word before, it's a New Testament Greek noun meaning affection, goodwill, love, benevolence, brotherly love. So it's often translated love in the New Testament, but it's a specific type of love. It's a love that prioritizes others over oneself. An Agape Geek Out is really a geeky AFK, away from keyboard, event that you invite others to participate in that raises funds and awareness for a ministry endeavor of your choice. And our Agape Geek Out event for the fall was the Extra Life Marathon, which I encouraged you guys to invite someone else to be a part of that with you as you do your marathon. Myself, I had a little less than a handful of people throughout my marathon that stopped by and helped, kept me awake or just kept me company and stuff like that. So anyway, that's the idea. It's something that you do in person with others, and you invite others to be a part of it with you. That, and it's something that raises funds and awareness for a ministry endeavor of your choice. It can be something as small and simple as inviting a few friends over for a double feature geek movie night, or something more extravagant like a big tabletop gaming event at your church. You know, I mean, the possibilities really are endless. The most important thing is connecting in person with fellow Christians and inviting them to get involved in ministry that tangibly expresses love and compassion to others. And as an added bonus, I think Agape Geek Outs can be a great way to raise awareness and acceptance of geeks in your local church community, as they see, you know, maybe forms of geekery that in the past they've, you know, raised an eyebrow at, suddenly being attached to things that are very good and things that are thinking of others and caring and being compassionate toward others. So anyway, just lots of good that I think can come out of doing something like this. Now, some suggestions for fundraising would be to, one, charge a small entry fee for your event if you think people would be up for that, or two, place a bowl. This is what I did at my last one. Place a bowl. Well, no, the last... The one that wasn't the Extra Life Marathon, about it was about a year ago that I did an event at my house. I put a bowl out near the event's entrance, or in a place that is like a high traffic area, with like a suggested donation label or something like that, or just maybe some things you've printed out that have information about the ministry. And a third way is to ask attendees to donate something with geek appeal, and then like sell raffle tickets for winning the collected pool of loot. And some ideas for raising awareness could include, one, taking a break in the middle of your event to show a brief promotional video for the ministry that you've chosen. Those are usually available at, lots of different ministries will have a YouTube channel or at least some kind of video that you could show that gives a synopsis of what they're all about. Second idea for raising awareness is to set up a card table in a heavy traffic area with printed out sheets of information about your chosen ministry. So I kind of, you know, I jumped the gun. I talked about that too early. I talked about that in the suggestions for fundraising part. Oh, well. The third one would be, near the beginning or middle of your event, share with everyone, you know, your personal feelings or involvement with the ministry of your choice. I mean, this is something that you can do all year long, really. I mean, there's many great ministries expressing agape love, and you're invited and encouraged to host your own Agape Geek Out event any time of the year, and then share the results with us at agapegeekout.com. This April in particular, though, we'd like to combine our efforts and encourage you to host an Agape Geek Out specifically to raise funds and awareness for Show Hope. And you can find out more information about this ministry by just going to showhope.org, showhope.org. God has a heart for orphans and for adoption. He longs for children, young and old, to be in loving families. Throughout Deuteronomy, Yahweh shows his compassion toward orphans through his commandments regarding the fatherless. Inspired by the Holy Spirit, James tells us, "Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world." And that's in James 1:27. I read that from the ESV. And God himself has adopted all non-Jewish believers into his family. Romans 8:15 says about us as believers in Christ, "For you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father." And Abba, I think it's Hebrew, but anyway, it's a word that ancient Hebrew children used to first talk to their fathers. They would say Abba, Abba, instead of like dad, 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 dad. They said Abba instead. So Show Hope is a movement to care for orphans, restoring the hope of a family to orphans in distress around the world. It's founded by Stephen Curtis Chapman and his wife, Mary Beth. Oh, I'm going to have to stop this recording. Dang it. I thought I could do it. My 5-year-old is singing very sweetly and doing something cute. He might get in trouble for this because he knows I told him I was going to be recording, and, here I am like waving at him and I'm putting my finger up and stuff like that, saying, no, no, no. forgetting that I'm on video right now, so we're not fooling anybody. So I'm going to take a break. I'm going to talk to my son about what he's done, and then I'll be back. Okay, good gravy. All right, now I'm back in it to win it, and I can actually think about what I'm saying and reading here instead of figuring out how to keep my boy silent. But anyway, Romans 8:15, "For you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons by whom we cry, Abba, Father." And as I said a second ago, that's one of the first words that Hebrew children said when they were talking to their recognizing their daddies, Abba, Abba. So Show Hope is a movement to care for orphans, restoring the hope of a family to orphans in distress around the world. It's founded by Stephen Curtis Chapman and his wife Mary Beth, and this nonprofit organization is helping to make a difference for the millions of orphans and waiting children around the world. Primarily, they do this through adoption aid financial grants that help give orphans families, and then also it funds special care centers in China that help orphans with special needs. So I'm hoping that we can combine our efforts by each hosting some kind of agape geek out in our homes or our churches. So if you would, please take a look at your April calendar and think about what kind of event, small or large, that you could host. It's a great opportunity to help orphans and also an opportunity to, I think, stretch ourselves into thinking of others a little more often, something that doesn't come naturally to me at all, and I suspect is also true of a lot of geeks. We can really tend to be focused in on, you know, what we're into and kind of forget that there's a wider world around us. I will be hosting a game night at my house for the college students at our church and inviting those who attend to donate to Show Hope. And you could do the same or have something more simple like a movie / TV show night with friends or any number of other ideas. So I hope that's something that you'll consider in the next few weeks. All right, well, DS9 Shawarma starts on this episode right after the credits. If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, for the last, I don't know, couple of years on the podcast, after the credits have done, I have finished, I've talked about one episode of Farscape, my absolute favorite TV show of all time, and gave kind of commentary thoughts on what I loved mostly, but also sometimes what I hated about each episode. And now that we had that the last episode of Farscape Shawarma last week, if you want to start that whole journey, you can go to episode 310 of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast to start that journey with me. But a new journey begins today on the 400th episode. Episode of this podcast, DS9 Shawarma. And it gets its name, if you didn't know this, from the end of the Avengers movie, how they were eating shawarma after the credits. And I know they were by far not the first movie to have a post-credit sequence, but that just kind of like became a little nickname for that kind of thing between me and my wife. I was like, no, I got to stick around and see if there's a shawarma, you know. And so it found its way into the segment on this podcast. So anyway, that's the explanation there. So DS9, as in Deep Space Nine Shawarma, starts on this episode after the credits. Resident Star Trek superfan Matt McKinney and his cohort Offscreen Kim will be taking us through Deep Space Nine episode by episode, sharing their thoughts about what they would probably tell you is the pinnacle of Star Trek TV history. And I might be persuaded to agree. Matt and Kim also host POSTOS, a video series that both mocks and celebrates Star Trek from the perspective of a fan that truly loves Star Trek. POSTOS is part of the Christian Geek Central Network, and I highly recommend checking it out. For an introduction to Matt and his love of Deep Space Nine, you can check out the Trek Talk segment of this podcast, episode 293, starting at about 22 minutes in. And then stay tuned after the credits for this episode to hear the premiere of DS9 Shawarma. As a reminder, I want your voice and your interest to be a part of this podcast in Christian Geek Central. So whether you have an idea for a segment already or you just want to be a part of the fun somehow, we want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. It's also a great way to promote what you're doing if you like. So for more info, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Well, in this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of what I would call the churchy language that we often take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply at least some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in Scripture, just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth, and that's something we can all do, which is one of the main reasons that I do this despite not being an expert. There are so many awesome resources available online today, if you figure out which are the ones that are actually credible. And anyone can dig in. We don't just have to leave it to our pastors and professors. There's so much that we can discover and apply. There's so much wonderful change and transformation that can come about as we get to know this book better. And this, I'm convinced, this time in human history has the greatest potential for believers to dig in and understand the word and apply it to their lives more so than any previous era that has been. So anyway, I hope you'll take advantage of the technology and the resources that are available to us all and join me in just kind of digging into the word here. So we've been going through the book of Hebrews, and we're at chapter 11. We've actually been in chapter 11 for a while now, and we've arrived at verses 32 and 33. We've been hanging on 32 for a while, looking at each of the names here, but we're moving on to 33. These two verses in the ESV read, "And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions." And the list is going to go on in verse 34, but we're going to stop there for now. So we've been taking a look at the list of names that the author of Hebrews assembled here to that he assembled to exemplify faith in the lives of well-known believers. With each name on the list, we've been looking back at their stories in the Tanakh, that's the Old Testament, and tried to make some observations about, you know, what made their faith a good example for us today. What might be the reason that the author of Hebrews included them on this list as an example of faith? At the end of the list, the author simply refers to the prophets, which would have referred to numerous believers in ancient times who served Yahweh and spoke for him to the people of Israel. And this would include Elijah, Elisha, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, and the 12 prophets who wrote the smaller books of the Old Testament. Now, trying to zoom in and look at each of these lives in detail is a great rabbit trail, but one that we're not going to take right now. Instead, we'll continue on to verse 33 and start hearing from the author of Hebrews himself regarding what faith looked like and what it made possible. The author says that through faith, believers have conquered kingdoms. This would at least include Joshua and a few others whom God called on to lead Israel in battle against nations who threatened or attacked them. The violence itself is not being glorified here, but rather the fact that God's power caused far superior enemies to be defeated by Israel's small and meager forces. Still, if you have trouble reconciling a loving God with the violence of the Old Testament, I'd again, as I have on this podcast, I would again recommend the book Is God a Moral Monster? By Dr. Paul Copan, which sheds some really useful historical, cultural, and grammatical light on this broadly misunderstood topic. It's also said here that through faith, believers enforced justice. This probably refers to the series of judges that led Israel before they had kings. Any police officer or court judge today would probably tell you that they see a lot of the nasty, broken side of humanity. And I have to imagine that enforcing and upholding justice can be ugly and discouraging work at times. But the trust that Israel's judges placed in Yahweh, which is what faith is by the biblical definition, it's trust. It's something that's earned through a reputation, through a reliable record. So the trust that Israel's judges placed in Yahweh made it possible for them to be both faithful and effective in their work. Through faith, believers also obtained promises, the text says, which could refer to them gaining what God promised, or that they were promised some future blessing from God. The text could be read either way in the Greek. Either idea could fit the stories of numerous believers in ancient times, and since Hebrew thought and language often allowed and intended multiple non-contradictory meanings in a single word or phrase, both ideas may be in mind here. Again, this book was not written in Hebrew, but it was written by a Hebrew to Hebrews, so it can, I think, be influenced by kind of the ancient Hebrew way of thinking when it comes to multiple non-contradictory meanings being intended at the same time. By trusting in God through our day-to-day moments, we can experience blessings promised by God long ago. As we trust Him, we are blessed with wisdom and insight about life. We avoid self-destructive choices, and we're able to participate in what God is doing in the lives of others. Trusting in God can also result in a deeper understanding and assurance of the promises He tells us now regarding our future rewards, eternal fulfillment, and ultimate rescue from evil. Daniel is the most well-known for stopping the mouths of lions, as the text says here. Faith is said to have made that possible at the end of verse 33. And that story of Daniel can be found in Daniel chapter 6, verses 17 through 22. Benaiah, which is a name, I'll be honest, I had no recollection of until I'd looked at this material. But Benaiah also killed a lion in a pit. We see that in 1 Chronicles 11:22. And Samson was empowered to kill a lion as well. And we can see that in Judges 14:5 through 6. I can't remember if I mentioned that in when we were looking at the life of Samson, because he's on this list. It's likely that far more believers have been killed by lions in the Roman Colosseum than have been rescued from them miraculously. So faith does not guarantee our safety or victory, but God does respond to the trust His people place in Him and is known to do so in astounding, dramatic ways. So as I try to ask every time we kind of look at a text in the Bible, I arrive at a point where I try to ask myself, okay, so what's in this for geeks? What's in this for you and me? And that applies specifically to what is often true of geeks or our temperament or temperaments. There are multiple, I suppose, temperaments of geeks. Yeah, I mean, not I suppose, I know there are. Well, anyway, as I look at this text and think about that question, I think that, you know, you and I may not be surrounded by overwhelming numbers of people who want to kill us, but we're often surrounded by people who don't understand us and may even dislike us or become antagonistic toward us. And our trust in God's ultimate control over those situations can move God to respond by bringing defeat to the hard-hearted or graciously disarming our enemies and turning them into friends. We may not be responsible for administering justice in our communities, but now and then we're also faced with the choice of having a difficult conversation with someone about sin. Which is, I suppose, in all of these, if you can't see the pattern so far, I'm just looking for an analog to what was accomplished through faith in this passage here. And my reasoning is that, you know, all these analogs that I'm pointing to are actually less intense than what was mentioned in these verses here. So my logic is, listen, if through faith all these things could be accomplished, then surely through faith, we can see similar movement from God and the Holy Spirit in these things that we do encounter that have some similarities, but are less intense than what's mentioned here. Sorry, getting back on track. I'm getting off my notes here. So we may not be responsible for administering justice in our communities, but now and then we are also faced with the choice of having a difficult conversation with someone about sin. And if you're like a lot of geeks, smoothly executed conversations are often not among our strengths. But in these times, we'll experience more of God's blessing on the situation if we trust Him and His Word to teach us how to interact with others more successfully and lead us through uncomfortable conversations. There's so much in Scripture, in the Proverbs, in the New Testament letters, as Paul is talking to the church about how to just be together. And Jesus talks about conflict resolution. There's so much in the Bible about how to converse, how to deal with conflict, and just the mindset and the attitude we ought to have that's going to help us navigate all of those things. So I think if we trust that, you know what, God is wise, He is perfectly wise, and He does have the answers. He knows how to do this life, and He's provided us with the means to learn from Him whenever we want to take the time to do that. So that's, I think, what faith can result in as well. Many geeks can also be given over to depression or frequent discouragement, but by choosing to trust in the character and the promises of God, we can see the ways He's blessing us now, how his blessings increase as we trust him, and how he promises to ultimately and permanently rescue us when this broken and mercifully brief life is over. We're hopefully not in the position of needing protection from lions. But some of us are facing equally life-threatening or at least debilitating health problems. But our trust in Jesus proportionately gives contentment and a view of our purpose and hopeful expectation of victory or rescue, all that in the midst of our pain and difficulty. The Apostle Paul experienced repeated suffering. He was beaten countless times, often near death, was dealt 41 lashes on 5 different occasions, was stoned, shipwrecked 3 times. I mean, I don't have a concept in my head of what it's like to be shipwrecked, especially in ancient times. But he was shipwrecked 3 times. And adrift at sea, as near as I can tell, for at least about 24 hours. He says like a day and a night. Can you imagine being adrift at sea, like hanging on to some plank of wood when it's black and there's only stars around you? Oh my gosh, that would freak the crap out of me. And that's like among the least of the things he experienced. He lived under constant threat from both people and the wilderness as he traveled. He went hungry and sleepless and suffered chronic anxiety. That was an interesting thing that I noticed this time about him. And all of that you can find in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 21 and through 29, where he talks about just like what he has suffered, what he's been through. God also gave him a physical affliction of some kind. We don't know the details, but a physical affliction to keep him humble amidst all the blessings and revelation that he received. He repeatedly pleaded for God to remove it, but God didn't, and said instead, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect," or complete, as that Greek word also means, "in weakness." And that's from 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9 in the ESV. Paul's response to that was to say, "Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness." If this is the case, if his power is made complete, displayed in its completeness through my weakness, then I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weakness, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. In other words, when I am weak, that is when the strength and power of God is working in me and doing stuff like it doesn't do at any other time. And that's from 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 9 and 10, as I read from the ESV. Paul's faith in God's promises changed his entire outlook on death as well. In Philippians chapter 1, verses 21 through 24 in the ESV, it reads, "For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me. Yet which I shall choose, I cannot tell. I am hard-pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account." So faith is not a simple, just to kind of summarize here, it's not a simple feel-good, think-happy-thoughts, warm-fuzzy we try to hold on to. Faith like that that's not even biblical faith. If you look at the context and the Greek, that's a pop culture concept of faith. That is not the biblical idea of faith. And that version of faith has no potential to bring real and tangible transformation to our day-to-day lives. Faith, biblical faith, is trusting in God and in his accurate description of reality, despite our naturally distorted view of life. Faith results in a natural improvement in our outlook, and also relationally expresses our love to God, giving him then the opportunity to respond with real, tangible blessing, both now and in eternity.
Incoming transmission.
All right, this week I heard from Francisco, who wrote, "Hi, Peter. First, I wanted to say congrats on getting to episode 400 on SBU. That is so awesome. As I think I have let you know before, I definitely feel more equipped and encouraged after listening to SBU, especially the In Search of Truth segments. Second, I wanted to let you know I am anticipating A World of Shadows so much. No pressure. Wanted to share a bit of story how I got to that point. I think I originally heard about Spirit Blade back in the early 2010s, hearing it mentioned on the Sci-Fi Christian podcast. I listened to the trailer on your .net site, and honestly, I thought it sounded cheesy, so I didn't seek it out any further. Then, in late 2014, I was looking for another podcast to listen to, and while searching, I noticed Spirit Blade, and thought it was the whole audio drama free in podcast form, and thought I would give it a shot. It turned out to be the enhanced audiobook, which to my delight, I really enjoyed. Next, I found your free extended preview of the full audio drama, and at first, I was a little taken aback that it was kinda a musical. Wasn't expecting that. But I ended up listening to the preview dozens of times riding home from work until it got to the point where I wanted to find, to both find out what happened next, though I mostly knew from the book, and to hear more songs. Fly is my fave, he says, which, that, Francisco, that seriously shocks me. That is my least favorite. It's hard for me to listen to these days. My tastes and sensibilities in music have just changed so much. So, anyway, back to your words. So once I got some fundage, I had to get the first Spirit Blade, and I love it. Then earlier this year, I finally got Dark Ritual, and except for missing David's original voice actor, I might be even more a fan of DR than the original. And spoiler alert, don't worry, I'm going to blank out some words. Spoiler alert, you totally had me that everything happening to Merrick wasn't blank. No idea he was blank that whole time. And your performance regarding what happens to blank legitimately chokes me up. Last, I'm still getting chills when I listen to the after credits sequence in anticipation of what is coming in AWOS, which is what I call A World of Shadows, AWOS. Oink, oink, he says. And those who've heard that after credits sequence know what he's talking about. Anyway, I know I rambled and gushed a bit, but want to thank you so much for sharing Spirit Blade, SBU, and CGC, Christian Geek Central. Thank you for continuing to help us geek out and seek the truth. Smiley face, Francisco. P.S. I do want to help / get plugged in some way to help CGC, but in this season of life, I don't think I can commit to something that happens on a regular basis. Are there any one-off things CGC / SBU needs? Okay, well, my response, which I wrote to him, and I'll just share with you guys here in the podcast, was thank you so much for all the encouraging words and sharing your history with the audio dramas. And I'll kind of riff a little bit on stuff that I didn't write. But, your encouragement really does mean a lot to me. At the end of the day, I'm a frickin' insecure, artsy-fartsy creative type. And it is so encouraging and affirming to hear from people who the audio dramas or the podcast or anything else, you know, that I'm working on is useful to them and is having a useful effect on their lives in some way. So that really does mean a lot. It really does make the difference between sometimes me just kind of pushing along through my day and being like, this, I got, yes, let's do this. Let's sit down and let's do this today, you know? So thank you very much for all the encouraging words and for sharing your history with the audio dramas. I'm always very curious about how people find the audio dramas. Because I suck at the marketing side of everything. I've almost given up on it entirely. I'll probably do some kind of marketing push when Spirit Blade World of Shadows comes out for a month. But, you know, just pushing and putting effort into marketing doesn't mean I'm going to be able to do it effectively or know what I should do. Anyway, so I'm very excited to, and I hope that you enjoy what's coming in A World of Shadows, which should release only a few months from now. It's looking like the first half of May at the moment. I'd be curious to get more details on your initial reaction to the Spirit Blade trailer and what you found cheesy about it. And this goes to anybody else who listened to the trailer that you can find for it at spiritblade.com and get your thoughts. I might be creating new trailers soon for both Spirit Blade and Spirit Blade Dark Ritual that don't include the songs. Because as many of you already know, as I'm wrapping up the trilogy now, I want to kind of lock it into a state that's going to stand the test of time the best. And for that reason, I've actually taken Spirit Blade Special Edition and Spirit Blade Dark Ritual off of all online distributors. So you're not going to find it, unless there's a little delay in them taking it down. You're not going to find it at Amazon or iTunes or any of those places right now. And when you see it there again, they will be the Spirit Blade, they'll be the Legacy Edition. So it'll be Spirit Blade Legacy Edition, Spirit Blade Dark Ritual Legacy Edition, and Spirit Blade A World of Shadows Legacy Edition. You're only going to find the Legacy Editions if you go to Amazon and iTunes or any other digital distributor. And those Legacy Editions will not have the songs in them. I'm actually going back and removing the songs and making sure the transitions, you know, that normally had songs in them are smooth and, you know, the pacing still works and stuff as much as I can, to have re-edited versions of all these, because I think that although scoring, musical scoring, can date a movie or, you know, an audio book or something like that, I think it takes a lot longer for scoring to feel dated than it does for, like, pop music of any kind to feel dated. I think pop music of any kind, you know, feels dated much more quickly than the score of a movie or something like that. So I want to primarily from this point going forward, including the launch day of Spirit Blade: A World of Shadows, I'm going to be pushing those legacy edition versions. That's mainly what I'll be talking about. And in fact, they will be what I know they will be my preferred version. I might maybe right at the beginning, because it's still fresh off of the creative process, I will prefer this version with songs for A World of Shadows. But already looking back, I don't even want to listen to Spirit Blade with the songs in it anymore. And I'm getting to the same place with Dark Ritual. You know, I really think that my preferred version of these going forward into the distant future is going to be versions that don't have the songs. But if you're like, no, Pater, don't ditch the songs, don't da, 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 you're still going to be able to get both physical and digital versions of the versions with songs from our website at spiritblade.com. And those are all going to be branded special editions. So Spirit Blade Special Edition, Spirit Blade Dark Ritual Special Edition, and Spirit Blade A World of Shadows Special Edition will all still, from here on out, be available on our website for those that, you know, and going into the future, I kind of see those are for people that are interested in what the original experimental concept was, to have this sci-fi action musical audio drama. What the crap? I think for a lot of people, the musical thing might be just one thing out of the box too many. So anyway, that's the plan going forward. I totally got off of my notes here, but the trailer, yeah. So I'm creating versions of the trailers, I think, for Spirit Blade and Dark Ritual that will not have any of the songs that the characters sing playing in the background, because these will be trailers designed to promote the legacy versions, which is going to be the mainstream versions of these that will be out there going forward from here. And so now would be a great time to get feedback on especially the Spirit Blade trailer, but also the trailer for Spirit Blade Dark Ritual. The tone is just different from Spirit Blade to Dark Ritual. I mean, I made a choice that I wanted to go with just a much more grounded, serious, dark feel with the second one. I think the first one still definitely has these dark and intense moments in it. And it's, you know, it's violent and, you know, gory and stuff like that, you know. But there's a kind of an energy to all of the performances that represents a little bit more of what was happening in audio drama, and I want to say, like, the 90s. And going forward with Dark Ritual, I wanted to mimic the tone and a slightly more flat, even inflection, like you would see in movies, and just trust people to not need that extra energy and slightly exaggerated inflection to hold their interest, you know, as I think was the philosophy for audio drama for many years, and including up until the 90s. So it does have a different tone, and I don't want to betray that tone and try to market it as something that's not what it is. I feel like the trailer should represent the tone that it has, but at the same time, if I can avoid putting people off, I'd love to do that. So anyway, I'd love to get anybody's feedback on both of those trailers, but particularly the Spirit Blade Special Edition trailer at spiritblade.com. Anyway, is that it? Did I read that? I totally got off the rails here with my answer here. Okay. As for getting involved on a one-shot basis, Francisco was saying, you know, I can't, you know, the season of life I'm in right now, I can't do anything on an ongoing basis. I totally feel you. I got two small boys, and I am, like, at maximum capacity. You know, I was looking at getting a new kind of a ministry event started at our church, and I had to really figure out, okay, how can I do this without adding any time to my schedule? Because I am one weekly commitment away from having to drop some other weekly commitment, like my involvement with the College 20s group, and I do not want to do that. So I totally get that whole stage of life thing. And my answer is yes. Yes, there absolutely is room and desire for one-shot basis type stuff that you guys send in for the podcast or the YouTube channel. So I'd love for you to send in anything, anytime that you think has relevance to Christian Geeks. A review of something, even if I've already reviewed it, I like alternate opinions to be represented. Your thoughts on a topic relevant to Christian Geeks, or just sharing news/info that you found interesting and why you found it interesting. You know, really whatever you'd be most interested in talking about is what I want. So thank you very much for giving me the chance to kind of clarify what I'm looking for. So with that said, I will chime in once again to my weekly little spiel here, where I say feedback, give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? I said, what's on your mind? That's the part I always mess up. What's on your mind? What's on your mind? Did anybody notice? Show of hands. Did anybody notice what's on your mind? I don't know. You can leave that in the comments if you legitimately noticed before I pointed it out. So what should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? I got plenty of those. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we've got to hear from you to do that. You can send me an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com and get your thoughts played on this very show. All right. Well, that is it. Stay tuned for the premiere of Deep Space Nine Trauma, or DS9 Trauma, as I'll be calling it from here on out, I think. I was going to say, or jump back to episode 310, but that's not right. Oh, I forgot to make a note. It's episode... Crap! Okay, I got to stop my recording and look this up. I had it a second ago. Okay, I think I found what I was looking for here. I just wanted to reference that episode 293 of this podcast, starting about 22 minutes in, if you want to kind of get to know Matt McKinney and his love for Deep Space Nine briefly first before we launch in. But I'm sure you'll hear plenty of his love for Deep Space Nine along the way. So the premiere episode of Deep DS9 Shawarma starts after the credits of this episode of the podcast. Let me scroll down now. I'm forgetting stuff. I'm all kerfluffled. Is that a word? Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'll be sharing my thoughts on 10 Cloverfield Lane, the pseudo-sequel/spinoff of the giant monster Cloverfield movie. And then I might share some thoughts on The Division. I'm going to see if I can rent it. I'm just curious about a lot of things about that game, as maybe some of you are. So if I get the opportunity, I will rent that and plan on sharing some thoughts on that next week. Till then, thanks for... Oh, wait, crap. Wrong part of it. Till then, it was right in front of me, and I say this every week. I should have it memorized by now. Till then, check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you guys. Thank you so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and then you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
Hello, Peter. This is Mary Husenbaum. I just wanted to call you from my country. Because this the 400th of the podcast, and I did not want you to forget about me and my daughter. Good job with the show. Please make the more of the show.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Peter Frampson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
If I
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
Hello and welcome to Deep Space Nine Shawarma. We're taking over after Pater decided... Well, we're taking over after Pater finished with Farscape. And so today we're talking about the pilot episode of Deep Space Nine, Emissary.
I thought this was a really good episode.
I know, it was better than I remembered it being. And I already knew that this was probably the strongest of all the Star Trek premieres.
Well, it's not just a very strong premiere. It gives you a good idea, it's a good indicator of what you're about to get from this show.
Which, to be fair, is what a good premiere should do. That's why Voyager's failed, is that it kind of promised things it wouldn't have.
It shows you the conflict that you're going to have between the various factions.
Which you will have conflict in Star Trek, which is already better than a lot of Star Trek. Which is why I still say, Pater, if you're not already watching Deep Space Nine with us, you should get on board with this, because this is going to be your kind of Star Trek.
It gives us some good character establishment, although there are a few kind of clumsy expositional dumps like that with Odo.
Yeah, but you get to see the characters. It's interesting when you know where the characters are going to go when you see where they start, especially like someone,
oh, yeah.
The characters who grow a lot, like Bashir.
Or Nog. How weird is Nog?
Well, I don't even know if he has a name in this episode. He's just the short little Ferengi who's trying to steal at the beginning.
Yeah.
But the basic story, the basic premise of this episode is just where you would begin. We begin with the first time we actually get to see the Battle of Wolf Fleet 359 from The Next Generation, the famous battle where Picard was taken as a Borg and conquered a lot of the Federation with his unwitting help. And we see that Sisko lost his wife in that battle. And, you know, 4 years later, he's still dealing with the consequences of that. And so he takes over the station at Bajor. And Bajor has been 60 years being conquered by an enemy called the Cardassians. And so Sisko's job is to get Bajor ready to join the Federation. He has to help them recover from 60 years of being enslaved and teach them how to be independent, how to keep them safe, and so that they can join the Federation and be members.
Help recover their planet from the Cardassian depredations. Yep. Yeah.
And that promises what the show is going to be all about, which is, instead of we fly, look at a weird planet, have an adventure, and then move on to the next weird planet, we're staying on the same planet. So we have a lot of recurring characters, recurring issues. characters will grow a lot more because of this.
We'll have to live with the consequences of what we make a lot more.
Yeah,
which is actually a theme that's well explored in this episode.
Yeah, it is. Because later on, we find out the other big wrinkle of this series, which is the wormhole. And inside the wormhole are what's going to be known as the prophets, the spiritual beings behind the Bajoran religion, and they are aliens who live outside of time. And Sisko is their emissary, and he spends a long time in the second half of this two-parter mostly explaining linear time. It's so not action-oriented, but it's so well done.
And it's a good throwback to classic Trek. It's very cerebral, and it's very strange.
I really like what they do with how they do this. Is we've seen moments from Sisko's past and his present and people he knows, and so they change the camera lighting so you can tell it's like in his mind, and then like flashes of a person from his past will start talking, and then suddenly he'll be talking with Captain Picard as the Borg in just an instant, like in the middle of the same sentence, and it's just always flashing around because you realize they're communicating in his mind through his memories. And it's disorienting at first, and so you feel like Sisko because you're disoriented, but soon you catch on, just as Sisko catches on, and soon he's just taking this all in stride, and he's communicating with them.
It's a well-shot scene, and
there's some good double meanings for the character they get to later.
Yes, yes.
We don't want to ruin it, because that's one of the good reveals, is just what this is really all about for Sisko.
I think also very well done is the Battle of Wolf 359 at the beginning. It's brutal. It's extremely just nice effects, especially for a TV budget. And what was this, 93?
No, it was probably made in 92. Before Jurassic Park, to put it in perspective, on a TV budget.
And it still looks good today.
And if you think that looks small, Deep Space Nine will later have enormous, like probably the best battles of all Star Trek, even the movies, will Deep Space Nine will have. So if this sounds like it's boring Star Trek where they just talk for an hour, believe me, there's action in this show plenty. Even in this pilot, which I'd forgotten that there was a battle of the Cardassians at the end. I thought they bluffed their way out of it.
Yeah, but that was relatively brutal, too. They had a lot of pyrotechnics going on down the promenade.
In fact, actually, later, when they have battles, you don't see nearly as much exploding on the promenade. So, trying to think what else there is about this episode that stands out. Most of it is just setting things up, explaining where we're going to start from, which is interesting. We get to see early Dax. And early Dax, I find a lot more likable than where she goes later on. Because at the beginning, Dax is a character who has a slug inside of her that has the memories of many lifetimes. Every time a person dies, they take that slug and pass it into a new person. And so they become like this sort of immortal being that goes through different lifetimes.
They're an amalgamation of different personalities that accrues as it goes.
And at first, she's kind of like this very aloof, wiser-than-wise, young, beautiful woman. And I find that interesting. But then later on, they turn her into she becomes a party girl, and she's pretty skanky, and she gets really smug and just convinced she knows more than everyone. And I don't like where they go with her. She's like the opposite of Dr. Bashir in that. Dr. Bashir starts off really unlikable because he's new, and he thinks he knows more than he does. And later, they make him far more interesting and complex. Dax, they do kind of the opposite of that. That she starts out interesting, but then later, as you get more and more, you realize, well, no, she's just some idiot who's not as smart as she thinks she is. I like what they did with Major Kira. She's the first officer. She's the Bajoran. And at first, she seems like she's just going to be a really angry person, really bitter, and always yelling at people.
But she's got a good reason for being like that.
Yeah, she does. And she'll get better, but even more than that, even by the end of this episode, you see that she's being smart. She's being clever. And she actually is willing to surrender at the end. And she doesn't have to surrender, but she's willing to surrender to save lives. And considering that at the beginning she was ready to just kill everyone who gets in her way.
Well, even just in this episode, you're seeing quite a bit of character, not just establishment, but development.
Yeah. It's already doing a stellar job with character development. If you like characters, this is a good show for you.
Yes.
I guess we'll wrap up with this first one. It's the two-parter Emissary. Again, if you like character growth, if you like consequences, if you like conflict, if you like action, this will be a good Star Trek show. And if you don't like Star Trek because it always feels like it's kind of aloof and boring,
sterile.
Everyone gets together and everyone gets along and it's never a real challenge for anything, this is a good Star Trek for you. This really is the black sheep of Star Trek.
It's the redheaded stepchild. Give it a chance. It'll impress you.
And I think it's very fitting that of all the Star Treks, this seems to be the one that has a lot of the more underground fan base. It's like most people, you know, they like Picard, they like Riker, they like Kirk, they like Spock. Some people really like Voyager, but this is the one where it gets people really excited and jazzed about it. This is the one that really, this is where I went from I enjoy watching the show to I'm a big fan of the universe. So if you like world building and that kind of thing, this is a Star Trek for you. If you want to see a bunch of like the weird Planet of the Week, not that much in DS Space Nine. If you want like Doctor Who stuff, where today we'll have a completely different adventure down over here.
That's more TNG for you.
Yeah, that'll be, most of the other Star Trek would be better for you on that, but if what you like is something more like Firefly, this is probably the closest you'll get to a Star Trek Firefly type show. Well, that'll be about it for this episode. Tune in next week and we will get on to the next episode.
Catch you at the next one.